Shemai a Croeso. Hello and welcome to the CC4 Museum of Welsh Cricket Podcasts. I'm Stephen Hedges. In this, our final chat with Michael Hogan, we finish by covering his thoughts on Glamorgan as well as his own career. Again, there are two things to bear in mind. Our interview took place before the news of Michael's move to Kent County Cricket Club was made public, and the quality of the audio is not great, particularly from Michael's end. We hope this doesn't distract from his contribution and to your enjoyment of the podcast. I was looking at your first-class figures. Your economy rate in first-class cricket is 2.71. You must be really proud of that.
Yeah, I guess. It was always sort of a thing for us as a bowling group in Australia that I'd also tried to bring here, and we tried to adapt here, was that we wanted to go at less than three and over for as long as we could as a group. And whether that meant that if someone else led a bit more, then it was your job to help him out and bring it back. So that was sort of the way I used to distract from my bowling, was that I would look to go under threes and to keep it under that, I suppose, for as long as I have. Yeah, it's been good. But yeah, like I say, that was my job, is to be take wickets, but keep it as dry as possible.
I'm just going to run through your kind of record for Glamorgan, at least. 273 appearances, 681 first-class wickets, including your Australians. Fastest man to reach 100 wickets for Glamorgan. Glamorgan Player of the Year, 2013 and 2014. You were awarded your county cap in 2013 after taking over 100 wickets in all forms of the game that season. Finally, this year, inducted into the Glamorgan County Cricket Club Hall of Fame, and also awarded a testimonial season for your final season with the club. How do you feel about receiving all of those plaudits and hearing all of those figures? Do you take that as personal recognition, or you always sound very much like you're a team man before you're a personal man?
Yeah, I mean, personal milestones, you know, I guess they're always nice, and it's probably something that I'll be able to reflect on a bit more now. The county cap was a nice one. It's but also the Hall of Fame. I think that was I nearly broke when I was at the Buccaneers dinner this year when I was awarded. I was inducted into the Hall of Fame. I nearly broke. Don't normally get too emotional, but that nearly got me. I think that was pretty special. I think given there's only we're up to about 430 players play for Glamorgan, and I think there's only 34 before then. Matt Maynard was the last one before me, so to be the 35th, understanding some of the history and some of the players that are in that Hall of Fame, that was pretty special for me. That was a nice moment. That was something that I'll always remember. Yeah.
And 380 first class matches, never dismissed LBW. Tell us a little bit about that record.
I think it's just, it's just something that's grown legs, really.
One of my colleagues asked, were you nervous in those last couple of games when you went in, thinking, Christ, it might go at this time?
No, not really. I thought that maybe Middlesex, Tim Murder, of all people that might get me, he would be the guy I think that could get me. I also got a little bit nervous because as it started to get a little bit more widely spoken about and it started to make its way into sort of like into the media and the cricketer and these sorts of things, and that someone, an umpire somewhere is going to be out to get me. So if I get here, I'm going to get sawn off, and they're going to, regardless of where I'm standing. But managed to find other ways to get out again.
Yes. You advertised the pads.
Yeah, it was a bit of a joke because I knew obviously the running joke of obviously the LBW or lack of LBWs. I've still got them.
They'd find a nice home in the Museum of Welsh Cricket if you wanted to pass them on. Andrew Hignall.
Yeah, I'm sure they would. To be fair, it's just probably not a bad idea. I thought about auctioning off a few of our guys, Dave Lloyd, around the London Marathon this year for TFN and Georgina. You are our physio. Did the Ironman this year for Air Ambulance Service charity. So I thought about auctioning them off for the charities, but I ran out of time really. So I may still do that if they're still open in the charity. We'll see.
As you get ready to sort of leave Glamorgan and Wales for the last time, where do you think Glamorgan are now as a club? How do you see their future?
We've made some great steps this year in red ball cricket. Obviously, some really strong signings. You know, Sam Northeast obviously shores up that middle order. Batting at four is a quality player. I think realistically, we'd need to be looking at a few more signings. I like to think that with the players that I guess we've released or that are leaving, myself included this year, that if you're looking to release those sorts of players, you need to get someone better to fill those spots, hopefully, or you've got your eyes on someone better to fill those spots. So we obviously need to make some what I would say astute signings, but we're probably not in the financial position of a few other clubs, but reading between the lines, we've released a few bowlers this year, so we should be looking to sign a bowler or two, and then preferably I would say the play all formats, and then probably similar with the batting. I think probably need a couple of extra batters as well. Hopefully we see progression from Alec Horton, rightly or wrongly, needs to be given some game time. Looking to play first 11 soon. I think he's done quite well for England under 19s, and the majority of those England under 19s players are playing for their counties now. So I think that's something that the club may have to look at. He'd be one, whether he's playing as a batter or Chris. Obviously Chris Cook. There's no way you could drop him, but he may be able to bat a little bit higher and not keep. He's averaged over the last 3 years with the bat. I think Chris is in the 50s, so he's certainly not a player that you can drop, but maybe look to go into the field and horse keep, but I think we need to make some signings. So without sort of trying to get too carried away with my position, it's a lot of experience and a lot of wickets to lose without making any sort of replacements. So hopefully they can go somewhere and find a way to sign a few players.
I'm just going to throw some questions from my colleagues that they've passed on to me. In retrospect, was starting your first class career relatively late not such a bad thing?
I think so. Obviously, you've got your own sort of path. Everyone's got their own path, I suppose. In terms of longevity, I would say yes. I think I gave my body a chance to grow and develop before I put the strains of bowling on it, which probably helped. But I'd say with ambitions of playing for Australia, time I probably needed to start a little bit earlier. If I you know, to have more time to do that. But I think I'm happy with the choices that I made and the path that I've sort of forged. So there's, you know, I wouldn't look back and say that I wish I had done this or done that better.
Who are the best young fast bowlers that you've seen on the county circuit in recent years? Do you think there's anybody that's, as county cricket fans, we should be keeping an eye out for in future seasons?
I mean, there's a few. I think the young guy, Sam Cook, from Essex, is widely unknown. I think he's probably been around for a few years, but he looks a really class bowler. Yeah, there's probably not a heap in terms of young bowlers at the moment. I think probably the young batters are more likely the ones that seem to shine. The bowlers tend to wait a few more years before, you know, before they start to progress towards their sort of mid-20s. Obviously, Potts has done quite well for Durham and England. He destroyed us earlier in the year as well, which probably got him in the England side. So, so Matty Potts is probably the other one that's obviously just broken in to that England squad now.
Ollie Robinson did the same last season, wasn't he? He had a great game against Glamorgan and then got into the England side.
Yeah, I wish they had taken it. They've got him into the England side off the back of that. And Kieran Carlson had 100 in each innings. He's the only guy that looked like scoring any runs on the pitch. And they picked Ollie Robinson and left Kieran behind. But not saying he should be in the England squad, but maybe you could add a look in for the Lions at some point. But, we tend to, as Acklemore, we tend to nudge people into that England setup.
Okay, you played in the Big Bash, as you said, probably at the height of its success, and you've also played in the 100 this season for the Southern Brave. Do you think they've got the formula right with the 100? Do you think they've got the elements that made the Big Bash successful there?
Yeah, they have. Obviously, they're encouraging fan participation, and it's a bit of a party atmosphere. It's a short tournament, which always helps. It keeps people engaged because it's on and off. So it's round one within a month. Whereas the Big Bash started, it was sort of 5-6 weeks, and now it's 10 weeks, more games and more. So I think the product that they've got is a good one. Whether I'm all for the format, I'm not sure. The sets and the various things, I still didn't quite understand a lot of the rules, why they held up white cards and these sorts of things.
And you were playing in it.
I was playing, exactly. I just bowled when I was told to bowl. I'm not completely sold on the format, but in terms of the product they have and the way and the crowd participation, the way they're attracting families and I guess also promoting a women's game, which is important as well. The way they've sort of gone about that is they're on to something there.
The final question from my colleagues, and this is I guess related to that last one. We've had the high performance review in English cricket now that has really kind of discussed the possibility of the reduction of red ball cricket to try and improve the results of the English Test team. Do you have a view on it as an Australian?
A couple of years ago, when they started off this 100 thing, it was like, well, our priority is still red ball cricket. That was one of the major points that they made. Was, no, this is our priority, still red ball cricket. It's still red ball focus. But we're just going to have 3 months of white ball cricket. And I sort of, after playing the T20 and then moving into the 100, I sort of feel like there is too much white ball cricket. Now, I don't know sort of the feedback from the players in terms of why. But if you're playing too much cricket because you're playing, if you want more space to play, shall we say, more lucrative tournaments around the world, then maybe you can miss a couple of those. As soon as you take more red ball cricket away from I guess, one player's developments, and also supporters who obviously want to come and watch the red ball game, you get the game will die off. The red ball game will die off, and you'll probably find that if they do that, it'll only be other places will follow, and it'll end up being, the top 5 or 6 teams in the world will start playing red ball cricket, and that will be less frequent, be more white ball again. I think you'll probably lose the game. So I'm against it. Yeah, I think you probably should be playing more red ball cricket. Easy enough for me to say, I suppose, now that I'm leaving the game. But I think there should be either the same or more red ball cricket. I think probably they could look at maybe a hybrid tournament in terms of how they structure the 50 over in the T20 comp. Maybe they can look at making that a 35 over tournament, something like that, and forge those two comps into one. Then that frees up some space, but they can't. I guess the other option is to keep playing red ball through the 100. Maybe that'll give lesser teams an opportunity to, or possibly give the bigger counties more a reason to actually start getting, shall we say, just solid county cricketers rather than monopolising the best players, so that other counties miss out. But I don't know. There's so many. I've been thinking about this for a while. There's so many thoughts that sort of rattle around in my brain. it might encourage the bigger teams to rather than buying just the superstars, they just need to actually look at getting some solid county pros as well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for your honesty on that. What will be your enduring memories of your career in first class cricket? What will be the stories that you'll tell your grandchildren in years to come?
I don't know. I'm not really sure. I think probably none unless they ask me, really. It's sort of just like, I don't know, if I close the book and that sort of chapter's done, I guess. Unless I make my way sort of back into the game in some sort of capacity, then I think that that sort of history, it may only be that when we return, like we do plan to return to Cardiff and to visit various people over time. It's not something that we can just sort of shut off and not revisit it, since that is for a quarter of our lives here. So, when people ask, I can offer advice or offer some stories, but it's just one of those ones. I was just here to do a job that people paid me to do, and I've done it for the best of my ability, I suppose, and as good as I can for as long as I can. But there's no sort of highlights, I guess, that I'm not trying to leave myself up in light. So that's job's done, and hopefully someone else can pick up the baton and take it further and maybe be better.
And what about Wales? What will you and Rachel and the children take back with you from Wales to Australia? Any?
Well, my kids have certainly taken back a Welsh accent, as it turns out. So. They've got that, but no. I mean, we've loved it here. We've lived here for, like I say, 7 years. We've got some of I've forged some really great friendships, or we've forged some really great friendships, I should say, not just me. It's not a personal thing, it's as a family. And, I guess these sorts of things, we will remember the people that we run into and the kindness, I think. That's one of the guys like John Williams and supporters clubs, the travellers, the followers, they're people that you don't get that sort of stuff in Australia. They're just normal people who just really care about the club, and they're trying to, give the club the best exposure they can. John's forever working hard and does it all for the club and for nothing back, really. And those sorts of people that, the fabric of the game, certainly in Cardiff, and the supporters in general, they're always here for the most part. The supporters that are here at the ground are incredibly supportive and always, they've always got your back, it seems. So that's certainly something that I'll take. You don't get that in Australia.
Well, perhaps on behalf of all of those people, the many kind of supporters of Glamorgan and people who, play recreational cricket who still look to Glamorgan as their club, I'd like to wish you all the best to you and your family for the new part, the next part of your life. And remind you that there's a little Welsh phrase that there'll always be a welcome in the hillsides for you. So whenever you do come back, we'd be very pleased to see you all.
Lovely, thank you, appreciate it.
For a final time, we'd like to thank Michael for the time he gave us for these interviews and to wish him every success in the next stage of his career. Join us next time when we celebrate a rather unconventional friendship between an ordinary club cricketer in Wales and the greatest batsman the world of cricket has ever known. Doug and the Don is a special exhibition now open at the CC4 Museum of Welsh Cricket at Sophia Gardens that covers the friendship between Douglas Davis and Sir Donald Bradman. So do join us again when we'll be hearing some more stories about the great game of cricket from the great country of Wales. Bye for now.